Good evening, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will start with a little housekeeping. You can virtually raise your hand to be recognized using the raise hand button found on the participant tab. This is also where you can change how your name is presented. We encourage you to be aware of how you are presenting yourself online. These Zoom meetings are essentially open to the public. Note that you can click the video stop and start button to toggle your camera on and off. We will be recording and publishing only the audio portion of this meeting to the simpleactions.net website. During tonight's meeting, you will be able to send chat messages to the hosts only. That will be myself and David F. And we'll also post a link in the chat for online giving, and we'll mention that later when we do the seventh tradition. And for those of you who care to join, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And the Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you need numbers or help connecting, send a chat to one of the hosts and we can help you with that.
Yeah, my name.
Hey, BJ. All right, the preamble. Sorry, folks, forgive me. I'm a little rusty. Let me share this screen. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contribution. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a result, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on step three. Please welcome our panel this evening, Dan C. and Aaliyah. Now I will read the first paragraph, which is on page 60. Let me get this share up for you folks. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Section one, page 60, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. And Aaliyah and Dan, which of you would like to go first? There's a lot in the, just those few lines.
You go ahead, Aaliyah.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Aaliyah and I'm alcoholic. Thank you, Dan. My sobriety date is February 14th, 2016. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. And I have commitments in the district. I'm a GSR for my home group. I don't say these things because to be braggadocious. I say these things because I take interest in doing things for other people and stepping outside of myself today. That's what relieves me from my crazy and my alcoholism. So, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, and C, that God could and would if he were sought. When I came in here, I couldn't really string any days together. I drunk a lot. I've been around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for about 6 years up to that point, but I could never stay stopped. I could never get down with this program. I had no idea that I was powerless over alcohol. But I knew my life was unmanageable by the things that would sometimes happen while I was drunk, or the things that I was capable of. Once I got a thorough understanding of the fact that I was powerless over alcohol, and that I was doomed to keep doing it. It's not that one day, it wasn't a phase. It wasn't one day I was going to miraculously just put the plug in the jug and have a normal life. There was a real problem. There was a real problem. And, you know, I used to drink and say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic and stuff like that, but I didn't really understand the depths of that. So when we got to this part in the book, I could concede that I was an alcoholic and I could not manage my life whatsoever. Everything I had done up to that point, I either quit before I finished, didn't try at all, and I was just essentially just stuck in the bottom. My experience that no human power could have relieved my alcoholism. I mean, the partner, my mom has almost 30 years of sobriety, and she couldn't tell me anything about this program. She took me to my first AA meeting and spoke for me. But I couldn't even get sober just for her. I couldn't stop for that. I couldn't stop for a job. I couldn't stop for myself. I've gotten into sticky situations before with alcohol, and you would think, you know, I could keep my word to myself, and I could not. So something had to give. I literally just came in here, just something has to give. And that God could, and what if he was sort? I believe that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous worked for you people. And being that it worked for you people, maybe it could work for me if I actually gave it a try and listened to someone else for once instead of listening to my bright ideas, which availed me nothing. So that's all I have for that part.
Thanks, Leah. Dan?
Hey, good evening, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Dan. And only by the loving and powerful grace of God and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have absolutely recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body to a profoundly and gratefully hopeful state of mind and body. Mike, thank you so much for your service tonight. Aaliyah, thanks for your awesome lead and for jumping into this. My sobriety date is May 13th, 2020. I did get sober in the middle of the pandemic online because the power of our program absolutely, in my experience, has the ability to transcend time, space, and technology. We have a wonderful program at our disposal, and it really works so long as we are willing enough to surrender to it, right? I have a home group. My home group is the Sandbridge Group. We meet on Tuesday nights in Sandbridge at the Sandbridge Community Chapel. We are a big book study. I have a service position with my home group. I have a sponsor. My sponsor absolutely knows he's my sponsor because I call him every single day and remind him of that fact. My sponsor has a sponsor, his sponsor has a sponsor, and so on up the line. I am in the amazingly privileged position today to sponsor other people in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And by sponsoring other people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean that I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with them, with those people, and I take them through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they are very clearly written in black and white in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm always happy to encourage those people to find positions of service in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because service work is where it is at. It is what keeps me sober today. And all the people who ask me for help, I'm so grateful for them because they help keep me sober one day at a time. Yes. Oh my goodness. I mean, these three bullet points alone, holy cow, bring me right back to what I used to be like, what happened and what I'm like now as a result of this simple spiritual program of action. Holy goodness. What a wonderful way to kickstart a discussion of step three, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. I mean, my goodness. All I can say, it might sound like a repeat of some of what I talked about if you were here last week, but alcohol does for me what I cannot do for myself. Alcohol relieves me of the bondage of self, and it makes me happy, joyous, and free. Because when I am drinking, when my life is dominated by the bottle, I find my higher power in the substance in that bottle. I'm the smartest person in the room. I'm the prettiest person in the room. I'm the funniest person in the room. I'm the only friend that you could ever hope or wish to have when I am drunk. This program of recovery in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me every single day how to articulate what my experience really was, right? So in my big book, I've learned how my body, once I start drinking, always wants more booze and never less. So the minute alcohol passes my lips and hits my tongue and passes through my esophagus and hits my stomach and the digestion of that booze starts, I am off. And I only ever want more because I love what alcohol does for me. I absolutely love it. And what happens, this curious thing happens when I remove alcohol from the equation of my life, my mind takes over, which makes my sobriety unsufferable. Insufferable, unsufferable. Point being, I cannot stand being sober, right? So my body demonstrates to me time and time again that I cannot physically handle drinking. My mind demonstrates to me time and time again that I cannot mentally and emotionally handle staying sober. So I can't safely drink because of my body. I can't safely not drink because of my mind. So what the heck am I supposed to do? For an alcoholic like me, what I've come to understand is a truly chronic alcoholic, meaning I have an illness that progressively only gets worse, never better. For a truly chronic alcoholic like me, there's only one solution. And that has been the solution that I found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which again, clearly shows me in black and white what I need to do, because my drinking brought me to a place where I didn't know what to do. My drinking brought me to the place of understanding that I had lost a higher power in booze because of what it was doing to me. At the end of my drinking, I was no longer consumed with what it did for me. I was consumed with what it did to me. And what it did to me was bring me to the recognition that my life was not worth living. And everyone, myself included, would be better off if I were dead, right? So that's what my alcoholism did to me. And faced with that fact, coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous online, mind you, I had no idea what to do. I realize now, looking back at that experience, that I didn't need to know what to know, and I didn't need to know what to believe. I didn't need to know what to think. I needed to know what to do. What the heck am I supposed to do? And what I consider to be a lifelong sentence of sobriety, the prison jail cells of sobriety, right? Didn't know what to do. And what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous was a simple spiritual program of action that clearly showed me what to do. And in doing what I've been shown to do, amazing things have happened in the brief amount of time that I've been sober. And man, oh man, did I wake up this morning and live my day happily sober, which for a truly chronic alcoholic like me is miraculous. And all I had to do was understand what this bullet point A meant to me, that I'm an alcoholic, I cannot manage my own life. Not only when I'm drinking do I have an addiction to substances, but when I'm not drinking, I have an addiction to more. I have an addiction to me. I have an addiction to control. I have an addiction over you. I have an addiction over what I think of myself. I have an addiction of just like uncontrolled, unbridled, passionate desire, right? I just always want more, never less. So bullet point A. And B, very simply, when Dan is running the story of Dan's life, it's a bad story that nobody wants to read, right? That's bullet point for me, that anything, not having a great family, having a wonderful group of friends, believing in myself and having strong philosophical ideas, none of that kept me sober. People could never keep me sober, ever, because I'm a truly chronic alcoholic, totally addicted to self, totally addicted to control, totally addicted to the bottle, right? And for me, bullet point C, I just got to the point, my drinking brought me to the point of hopeless desperation, where I came to want God, this enigmatic, weird, strange, hazy, fuzzy, vague concept of God, more than I wanted booze, because booze was leading me to the gates of insanity and death. And somehow I became convinced very early on that this simple idea of God could do for me what even alcohol couldn't. Right? So A, B, and C, I'm right here. What a great way to start a meeting. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. All right, we put the next section up. Section number two, also on page 60, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we had decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only would people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. Okay, Aaliyah.
All right. Well, when reading this book, when I first came hopefully to stick and stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I really felt like that. Just what do you guys mean by this, and what am I supposed to do? And I read this piece, and it was like, well, you know, when I played basketball or even at the occupation I had at that time, I was always in collision with someone else. And someone didn't like me because of something I said, or I manipulated something, I lied about something. I didn't know what selfishness really meant and what it and how it played in my day-to-day life. So when, for instance, I was looking at my work situation, and it's like, you know, well, this person doesn't like me. And I had to actually look at my behavior. Up to this point, I lived my whole life on autopilot. I did what I pleased, and to damn to, with everyone, you know, or anything, as long as I got what I wanted. And I would take on these traits. I will be considerate. I'm typically an impatient person, but I will be patient. I would be generous. You know, I would either people please or just be savage. You know, those were the extremes that I played. But I didn't understand how that meant I was selfish. How was I hurting anyone else, especially if I got what I wanted? So here, I learned to start really looking at my actions. What am I really doing in my day-to-day interactions in my life? Because you guys said, you know, a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And like Dan had mentioned, and my experience, it goes with it as well. I was beaten down, man. I was desperate. You know, my family liked me, kind of, just because we share the same blood. Didn't have a friend group. I was miserable. I was frustrated. I had dealing with depression, all types of things. My inside world was horrible. So I was told to just start looking at my day-to-day actions, interacting with them. And I was shown to myself, you know, I learned what it really meant to be selfish, to push on my own self-will. And these are things I never even thought of before. I didn't know I was doing that at all. That's pretty much it. I was shown who I was, whereas I had no type of knowledge of that before, whether in the bottle or trying this sobriety thing, like for real. Not the times that I've taken off, gather 6 months here, or maybe have a year here, but I still had the same behavior. You know, I was just dry. So now that I'm actually doing the sobriety, I just had no idea that it took, I was looking at me, like, where does any of this have to do with my drinking? You know what I mean? So that's all I got.
Thanks, Aaliyah. All right, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, man, oh man, you know, Aaliyah's touching on this amazing point that we come to learn more about, I think not necessarily even from the big book, but from just experience of not drinking. We have this thing when we're not living in the solution called untreated alcoholism. And when I'm living with untreated alcoholism, believe me, you want me to be drinking because you don't want me around. Trust me when I say that. When I tell you that I just remove booze from the equation of my life, things get worse. Maybe not immediately, okay? I've gone through periods of living with untreated alcoholism in which some of the circumstances of my life, some of what I call now my conditions, seemingly got better, right? Like getting a job or, you know, going out with friends and, you know, having a boyfriend or, you know, getting into this relationship or that relationship or whatever. But underneath are those three those three curious little things that Dr. Silkworth calls restlessness, irritableness, and discontentedness. Oh my goodness. And the thing is, I have to note this, that my third step is a continuing process. Yes, I got on my knees with my sponsor and formally said the third step prayer, okay? But my third step is a continual process, because when I do not surrender to God as I understand him, when I do not continuously surrender in every minute of every moment of every day of my recovery, when I refuse to surrender, when I refuse to hand my life and my will over to the care of God as I understand God, I am miserable, and I have an amazing ability to make everyone around me miserable too. And if they're not miserable, I'm going to push and poke and pressure until you are as miserable as I feel inside, right? I still have the ability to do that in my recovery if I'm not actively working and if I'm not actively taking action to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. So all this paragraph, these two paragraphs, they are a constant. They do not end the first time I say the third step prayer. Nay. For me, in my experience, it is continual. You know, and what I love here so much is the big book showing me that I fall into the trap of self-will, even when I think I'm being a good person, right? Because this is something that I personally fell into a lot and sometimes still fall into, is this idea that, like, well, I'm such a nice guy, you know, like I'm kind and I'm loving, right? Like I'm a good guy, I'm a good person. Well, my big book tells me that that's not enough. That if anything, those might be deceptions to falling into the bedevilments, right? Those might be the deceptions that I'm using to keep my third step at bay because I want to stay in control, right? For me, my third step is all about relinquishing control. This this idea of you know, the director, each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, right? I used to, when I was very, very early on, you know, I used to say that I love this paragraph because my whole background is in theater. And like, I just really relate to that, like that metaphor of like acting and like being an actor, like I get it, right? I really don't. It's a process to getting to understand, and I'm still understanding what this paragraph is showing me. But I love to play, even if in the role of an actor. I'll put it this way. An actor, in a theatrical sense, serves a very small role. It might look to the outside eye very big, but behind the scenes, from the standpoint of a production and what it takes to mount a full-blown musical production, say, an actor is one of the smallest roles. An actor is nothing more than a vessel through which a story may be told, okay? If an actor in the process of mounting a production is trying to step on the toes of the director, in the real world, that actor is going to get fired, banned from the theater, banned from working. Now, as self-centered alcoholic actors, we live under the illusion, I live under the illusion that I'm never going to get fired from life and that I always know more than you do. And your life would be better if you just listened to me, because my ideas are the best ideas ever. And if you disagree, then you probably deserve to fall into a pit somewhere, or you owe me an apology. You know, that's the extent of my self-centeredness and my selfishness. I always know what's best, right? So like shattering, once I come to read and understand and live with experience of what this paragraph is showing me, that cutesy little, oh, I relate to it because I was an actor once, goes away. And the gravity and the reality of my addiction to control sets in. Okay. And my addiction to control is serious, especially when I'm not drinking, especially when I'm living with untreated alcoholism. Because yes, I can be a nice guy. I can be sweet. I can be charming. I can be angelic or whatever, but I can also be pretty rotten. And I, like everyone else, really do have a varied traits. The catch is that I just don't always see it for what it is. I don't see that addiction to self for what it is because I'm an alcoholic and I'm blinded by my own charm, right? My third step is what teaches me to let go of those preconceived notions of self, because my life, when run on self-will, truly is riotous. It is disgusting. There's a line on the next page, in the next paragraph, it's right at the end, that I have to ask myself all the time, am I not, even in my best moments, being a producer of confusion or harmony rather than harmony, right? So I ask myself constantly in my third step daily, am I being a producer of confusion or am I being a producer of harmony? Am I seeking self with all that I've got in me or am I seeking service with all that I have in me? That's only fueled by God as I understand God. Which is it going to be? And with my words, with my actions, who am I serving? Am I willing to step out of the director's chair and simply be the real actor, a true actor who knows his place, to allow God to be the director so that I can just be a vessel of service, a vessel of truth and honesty, right? There's a reason why before we get to this reading in the big book, How It Works starts off with this whole beautiful description of what it means to be rigorously honest, how to be honest, what that means, honest with who first, honest with self. So I must always seek that honesty. Anyways, I can ramble forever. This stuff just gets me going. It keeps me alive.
Awesome, Dan. Thank you. All right, next section. Section number 3, page 62. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems to be no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. I'm sorry, our own power. We had to have God's help. All right, Aaliyah.
Okay. So now we get down to the crux of it. I'm selfish and self-centered. And my troubles come out of me, out of my wants and desires, about around 100 forms of fear of self and self-delusion. And they're all, it is all made up in my head. Some of them are real, some of them are fancy. But for the most part, I'm always, in my experience, I was always trying to get ahead of the ball. So I would do whatever I needed to do to get ahead of the curveball. And I got hurt a lot. I bumped my head a lot out of things that I make up in my own head. You know, the worst part about this mental part of my addiction is, Dan said it, I wind up believing my own lies. My mind plays me. It's bad enough when I hate that other people play me. I hate that. I hate when other people play me. But to know that I've been playing myself for years and I still have the ability to do so, it's maddening. And it's just like, and it's like, I really want to do something. Because friendships disappear. I'm in New York right now. I'm born and raised here. And I don't visit anyone while I'm here. And it's not because I don't have friends, like genuine friendships here. I've pushed them all away because of the things that I've created in my head. Whether it was, you know, I didn't want them to see my drinking, or I've started off, I had an argument in my head with them about something they've probably done, and I've pushed them away and haven't spoken to them for years. I've been a transplant out of New York for over a decade, and it's like this every time I come. I don't really go and see my real friends, the friends that I had before I started drinking, the people that really care about me and my well-being. And that's straight up due to the self-delusion, the fear,
myself seeking when it came to my drinking or the things that I wanted to do, and my self-pity, like, well, I don't understand why they Valencia is not talking to me anymore. You know, we used to be so close, you know, why don't they reach out to me when I can simply reach my hand out? I can simply contact. I actually have their her number, you know, but there's a lot of people I don't talk to for this reason alone, because I've played myself so much. And the self-pity part is I don't want to have to go back to them and try to rebuild a relationship because I don't know how. And it tells me that in here, like, I'm unable pretty much to make relationships because I'm selfish and self-seeking. I'm run by self-delusion and I step on the toes of my fellas, even when I'm trying to do good. That's me drunk and sober, you know? So I have to have some type of help, you know? I need to bounce my thoughts off of someone else besides me. Extreme example of self-will run riot. And I usually don't think so. I know I didn't think so when I came here. But instead of, I don't know, when I first came here, and even sometimes since step three is a continual thing, sometimes I can't rely on my higher power. I rely on it because I'm stuck in some type of delusion, or I want something, or some type of fear. Like, it, at the end of the day, I wind up going back to the group. So there's nothing wrong with falling back on the group and the friends that I've had, I've made here to help me through these spots of self-will and my selfishness that I can't seem to keep off of me. So I need you guys' help. I need your help, you know? So, that's all I got for that.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Dan?
Yeah, I'm never going to see my flaws for what they really are. Right? I'm never going to see my sins as the doorways to resentment, which is the key to my drinking. I'm never going to see that because I never want to. There's a reason why in chapter two, right after the line, there is a solution. It says, most of us didn't like it. Most of us didn't like the self-searching. We didn't like the leveling of our pride. We didn't like admitting our flaws. We didn't like going to our fellows and admitting our wrong. We didn't like that. No. And I'm never going to like it. I'm never going to like calling myself on myself. I'm never going to enjoy telling on myself. Why? The answer to the why is right here. Because I'm selfish. I am unceasingly, endlessly selfish, and I don't know how to get rid of that on my own. Because when left to my own devices, the only thing I know how to do is make a mess of my life, make a mess of your life, and drink about it. That is the only thing I know how to do on my own. So I've once heard it said, a sick mind can't heal a sick mind. Right? Like, I can never, this is the way that I think of it. I can never think my way out of drinking. I can never think myself into better relationships. I can never think myself into a better job. I have to take action, right? And it all begins, taking action all begins with making a decision to take action. I mean, step one is really very simple, recognizing there's an issue, right? Step two, very simple. I can't be the one to fix my own problem. And step three, I'm making a decision to ask for help. I'm making a decision to take action, right? It's like, our big book is so smart. It's so clever. It's just so immaculately structured, right? The discussion of step three, if we're paying close attention, occurs right after we've read the entire program of action. So we know what we're getting ourselves into. It's not like we're stumbling around in the dark here. The book is very clear with us with what actions we need to take. Just what do we do? That's the main question of step three. Just what do we do? And then it launches into this three-page discussion of how we need to be convinced of these things, being convinced of the problem of self, right? That's what I need to be convinced of. that my life, when run on Dan's will, is always a disaster. Every single time, without fail, my report card demonstrates it, right? My spiritual records are a mess up until this point. And maybe sometimes now they're, there's a reason why we read through the entire spiritual program of action before we make a decision, because the book is not secretive. There's nothing here for me to figure out. I don't have to figure anything out. I just have to move my feet and trudge forward along the path, which has already been paved before me. Step three is me simply making a decision to do so. I don't have to figure anything out. I don't have to decode the inherent mystery of God, right? I just have to start small, start simply, and get started. That's really it. So stinking simple. So knowing what the steps are and making the decision to do them, here I am. The book is now convincing me of the problem of who? Me, right? Up until this point, we've even read in We Agnostics that lack of power, that was our dilemma. Oh my gosh, but I thought that drinking was my problem. Nay, nay, not according to the big book, right? If we're going to follow the logic of the big book, drinking is just the surface level of my problem. What my big book tells me is that drinking, my liquor, it literally says this, our liquor was but a symptom, it says. A symptom of what? Myself, my selfishness, my self-centeredness that has four fundamental components to it, which they so cleverly and so clearly give to me. My fear, my self-delusion, my self-seeking, and self-pity. Oh, and how smart is my big book for beginning to set me up for my 11th step, right? My, however, when on awakening, when I start every single day, because what's the first thing I ask for God to divorce my thinking of, but self-pity, right? We're in this sentence here in step three, we're saving self-pity for last. Saving the best for last, okay? Self-pity. Well, in my 11th step on awakening, we're keeping the big gun first. We're asking God to remove the big, big, big gun first, the cannonball of self-pity that I love to light and ignite and launch into the stratosphere, right? I love, when I'm in my natural state, oh my goodness, I love to live my life run on self-pity. And I just want you, I want nothing more than for you to pity me as well, to pity with me, pity for me, and give me all that you got. What can I suck from you? How can I suck you dry out of my selfishness and self-centeredness so that I feel an ounce of confidence, perhaps, right? Or an ounce of love or an ounce of intimacy. Right. At the end of my drinking, I was doing the most, what in my mind for me, the most wretched of wretched things, just to feel an ounce of closeness to another human being, which of course I never really got. I'm just point being blind to how I deceive myself. And my big book here is starting to open the door, you know, starting to allow me to see the scales in front of my eyes so that they can fall away. Well, what are some of the scales in front of my eyes but these things? My fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And each of those things my big book is telling me take 100 different forms, right? 100 different forms. What does Bill say in Bill's story? He says, I ruthlessly faced my sins. Granted, this is in his fourth step, right? I ruthlessly faced my sins. He doesn't say, I ruthlessly faced what a wonderful, loving, generous human being I am. What a kind husband I am. What a wonderful partner and friend I am. You know, what an amazingly talented businessman I am. No. He says, I ruthlessly faced my sins. In order for me to face my sins, I have to know what they are. And for me, my biggest sin, quote unquote, is my self-centeredness. That is the root of all my problems. And I can always trace my troubles today to some way that I set myself up right? Because I love to set expectations for me and I love to set expectations for you. And what are expectations but predetermined resentments? And resentment, again, being the door to my drinking out of my self-pity. Anyways, wonderful. Wonderful. I'm so glad to know at this point, again, I don't have to figure it out because my big book tells me, right, that me, myself, my self-centeredness, my selfishness, my striving and seeking self, that's my problem, not my drinking. And I don't know how to get rid of myself if not through a power greater than myself.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. All right, put the next section up. Section number 4, page 62. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. All right, Aaliyah.
I absolutely love this part. I love this part because I can drop the weight of being the actor and the director and the scene creator and the cameraman. And like, I can, one of the gentlemen in the room, he always talk about, you know, his shoulders was in his ears. And when he takes a drink, he relaxed. Like, this is where I can start relaxing. Like, I realized everything that I've done up until that point, I've been struggling. And I have multiple struggles and I don't have to carry that. Like there's relief to be had. And so my shoulders start dropping when I don't have to be the director anymore. All I have to do is show up to work and be the administrative assistant if that's all my job is, or the person that just makes copies. I can do that. I don't need to know everybody's job. He's the principal. Well, this to me is a class. I might want to listen to those who have experience before me. He is the father and we are his children. I think about my parents and actually letting them parent me instead of injecting my two cents or trying to tweak something to benefit me. And then I finally learned what a keystone was. I had no idea what that was for a plenty of years, but it's literally the making of a door frame. It's literally the making of a door frame. And I can walk through that. Like it's a solid structure and there's safety to be had on the other side. If I just rely on the program of action, if by then for me, I didn't have a real formulation of a higher power, but one was slowly coming into form. Something that I can do business with. So that thought of freedom, it was just, it tastes like sweet victory. I don't know. My flags were down when I came here. There was really nothing left for me but to drink. Like I said, in the doctor's opinion, it was a real hard going for life. Even though on the outside, you know, at the time I was in the service, I was a good sailor and everything, but I was bankrupt on the inside. I was supremely bankrupt. And so here I'm being offered a whole new life, something I've never tried, never experienced before. And I seen you guys and it's like, I want what you guys have. So I'm ready to take this position. I don't know where it's going to lead, but I'm not responsible for that anymore. You know, that's out of my realm. You know, this is where I start learning how the concept of putting one foot in front of the other on a 24-hour basis, instead of struggling through the 24 hours. I'm starting to learn to put one foot in front of the other. And it's just beautiful. I like this passage. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Aaliyah. All right, Dan.
I'll keep it quick because I know we're almost at time. Most good ideas are simple. One of my most favorite lines in this whole book, and this book for me happens to be full of good ideas, and they are all so stinking simple. Again, if there's no other point that I can stress in what I've learned in my experience in this beautiful program of recovery so far, it's just that I don't have to figure anything out. I can't think myself into any solution. I have to act myself into a solution. And by act myself into a solution, I don't mean act and form. I mean, take action. Doing what Aaliyah was just talking about, putting one foot in front of the other, recognizing that I can't figure anything out, even if I wanted to. No matter how much I love to overcomplicate the drama of life, I must keep it simple. Right. And how do I do that? Because I am an alcoholic with a chronic illness that only ever gets worse, never better, especially when it's left untreated. Right. How do I keep it simple? I just take the actions of thousands upon thousands that have taken these actions before me. They've paved the path. Now I get the opportunity to walk it, to trudge this road of happy destiny. And the best part of it is I don't have to do it alone. I get to do it with the help of my sponsor. I get to do it with the support of all of you, right? Our responsibility statement is such a beautiful thing because the hand of AA was there for me when I needed it most. And now, as a result of my third step and beyond, I get to be maybe a fingernail on a good day of the hand of AA that's available to other people, right? We have a beautiful fellowship. We have a beautiful program of action. We have a wonderful big book that shows us very clearly what to do. And I'm just so grateful to be on this path with all of you. Aaliyah, thanks so much again. You're awesome. And Mike, thanks for your service. Such a pleasure to be of service to you all tonight.
All right. Thank you, Dan. And thank you, Aaliyah. Awesome job, both of you. Folks, we're getting close on time. So that's going to be the end of the reading and sharing for tonight. So moving on to final announcements, starting with the seventh tradition, which states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. David has put our PayPal link in the chat, and it is my understanding that all contributions are passed through at this time to district, intergroup, and VAC and GSO. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcome environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. Home group members, please raise your hand. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting to connect with any of the folks that had their hands raised. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, someone will be available in the Zoom room after we close the meeting. Please stick around and talk with us, or feel free to email info@simpleactions.net with questions. And David, would you be so kind as to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Happy to. Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hey, David.
Thank you, Dan and Aaliyah. That was wonderful. A vision for you, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Awesome. Thank you, David. All right. Thanks to all who participated this evening. I'll now give everyone the ability to unmute themselves to participate in the Lord's Prayer and give everybody a chance to say thank you to our speakers after that. All right. First, we'll start with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Art in heaven. Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen. Thank you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's wonderful.
Woo-hoo. Thank you, Aaliyah. Amazing. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Great job.
Thank you, guys.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you.
Fantastic, y'all. Both inspired.
Yeah. You guys are good.